with big issues on the table from North Korea to Iran to the Paris Climate Accord, what are the expectations for the president at the UN, and how will the president's America First message affect the mission? Nicholas Burns is the former ambassador to NATO and undersecretary of state. He's now professor at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Ambassador Burns, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thank you very much, Todd.
Well, President Trump is going into his first appearance at the UN General Assembly. How is he seen now among the leaders that will be in the audience there 8 months into his presidency? Is the world more comfortable with him or less?
I think that the world is trying to figure out Donald Trump's worldview and strategy and what his priorities are for the United States. In a way, Todd, he arrives at the United Nations this morning as a weakened president. You see Congress asserting itself over the wishes of President Trump on Russia sanctions, on State Department budget. You see allies distancing themselves from us. I think it's fair to say that President Trump is no longer considered the leader of the West. Every American president has since 1945. That's probably Angela Merkel now, because President Trump has been so dismissive of the European Union and NATO and our Asian allies. So I think he's also distant from the United Nations and from most of the world leaders on some of the big transnational issues, climate change, refugees, what to do about the Syrian civil war. President Trump has been dismissive or opposed on climate. He shut down refugee flows in the United States. He's really been absent on Syria. So I can't think of an American president who has been more weakened, more distant from the rest of the world as President Trump.
And you said something critical there, Nick Burns, that he's no longer seen as the leader of the West. Angela Merkel is, and we're going to be talking about elections in Germany later in the show. Does that problem among world leaders at the UN apply to the United States in general? Is there a sense that Trump is not the leader of the West, but Trump is temporary, or that the United States more broadly is debased in front of those leaders?
You know, I think the United States is considered, apart from President Trump or even President Obama or President Bush, still considered the strongest country in the world. We have the largest economy and the most innovative, the strongest military. We're politically very influential. But under President Trump, he's rejected the idea of free trade. He's been very critical of the idea that the United States should be leading these big alliances in Europe and Asia, as every president has, Republican and Democrat, since the close of the Second World War. He is proposing to cut in half immigration. And as I said before, he has shut down refugee flows. So these are the building blocks, the foundation stones, if you will, of American foreign policy for 70 years. And as President Trump has questioned these building blocks, the rest of the world is struggling, I think, to understand exactly where he is heading in his foreign policy. And since he has been not been very supportive of democracy, he's not made that a priority, human rights at home, the Charlottesville comments, the United States president has been leader of the West because of our values, because of our democracy, because of our faith in democracy for others. And if President Trump is unwilling to say that's a priority, that robs us of a lot of our influence in the world.
There has, at the same time, Ambassador Nick Burns, been other signs of stabilization in the Trump foreign policy, right? I mean, a pledge to undo NAFTA in the campaign has become sort of negotiating around the edges, sort of nibbling around NAFTA. Criticism of NATO has become sort of an acquiescence to the mission of NATO. So is the world getting used to a lot of bluster and unpredictability from the president that becomes a form of traditional American foreign policy? Or do they really see the type of departure from American leadership that you seem to be concerned about?
Well, I think that's an unanswered question, because you're right, the president has not yet pulled us out of NAFTA, but the NAFTA negotiations are not going well. And President Trump himself, in tweets, continues to cast doubt on NAFTA. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, this was going to be the great strategic move by the United States to strengthen the position of the democratic countries in the Asia-Pacific region. And the president pulled out of that and didn't get anything in return. So I do think there are questions about the fundamentals here. I should say, Todd, I think there's confidence by the rest of the world in Secretary Jim Mattis and General H.R. McMaster and Secretary Rex Tillerson, that they are adults, that they tend to embody traditional American values, but it's the president that they have doubts about, and it doesn't It pains me to say this. I've worked for both Republicans and Democrats. I certainly want to see President Trump succeed on the world stage, but there's an inconsistency. It looks like they're heading in the right direction on an issue, and then he tweets something outrageous. The other day, when Britain was hit by a terrorist attack, President Trump publicly questioned the behavior of the British security forces, and he had to be rebuked by the British Prime Minister. We've never seen that happen before with an American president, so there's a lot of cause for concern.
The Paris Climate Accord is one of the biggest issues on the world stage, and there are so many others. We could talk about North Korea, of course. We could talk about Syria. We could talk about Myanmar and the Rohingya there. The president famously, infamously, pulled the United States out of the Paris Climate Accord, or announced his intention to do so, and then reports over the weekend that most of us have seen in the Wall Street Journal that the White House is considering staying in the agreement. Very well-timed leaks, I might add. Now, the White House has denied that, but how important is that storyline in front of the UN today?
In a way, it's the most important issue, along with North Korea, this week at the United Nations, because there are very few climate deniers among the world leaders assembling for the General Assembly. Nearly every country in the world accepts the science, accepts that the fact that we all, 7.5 billion people, have to do something about it. The United States and China are the largest carbon emitters. The United States and China had taken the lead under Xi Jinping and Barack Obama on the 2015 Paris Climate Change Agreement. Now there's a big summit this week at New York, and the American president won't be there and has publicly proclaimed that he will take us out. And General McMaster said yesterday on national television that that decision is not going to be reversed. So I think that we lose on the science, because every American should want to mitigate the worst aspects of climate change, but we also lose on our global leadership brand, which is very important to us.
President Donald Trump, in his first appearance before the UN General Assembly, a skeptical and it sounds like somewhat rattled world community looking for some direction from a president who values his erratic image. Ambassador Nick Burns, thank you for joining us once again.
Thanks so much, Todd.
Well, while we talk about the General Assembly today, let's look at the United States' role in the United Nations. The U.S. is the biggest contributor to the UN. It provides 22% of the UN's overall budget and close to a third of the $7 billion peacekeeping budget. The Trump administration, meanwhile, has proposed deep cuts to foreign aid, just the kind of foreign aid that goes to UN operations and peacekeeping. Now, Congress would have to go along with those cuts, but it is a big concern, especially for countries in crisis that don't get as much attention as, say, North Korea or Iran at the United Nations. The Democratic Republic of Congo is one such country, and a refugee crisis that's grown violent is an issue on the General Assembly's agenda today. Herman Hank Cohen has his eye on all of this. He's a former ambassador to Senegal and the Gambia under President Jimmy Carter, and former Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs under President George H.W. Bush. Hank Cohen, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Ambassador, talk a little bit about the ongoing crisis in the Democratic Republic of Congo. What's been going on there?
Well, the Congo is the biggest country in Africa, and it's been in real turmoil for a number of years. The government has a constitution, but they refuse to follow it. The people are very unhappy. And throughout this giant place, which is about as big as the U.S. east of the Mississippi, there are little wars going on in the east, in the center, in the west. And the government is just acting with complete repression. They just send in troops and just mow people down. And just the other day, as you mentioned, some refugees from Burundi, the neighboring country on the east, came in. And for some reason, the government troops killed about 30 of them. So it's become a wild west place, with the government just having no restraints, just going around shooting people.
So, Ambassador, how vital is UN peacekeeping in a situation like this in the Congo?
Well, it's totally vital, because in many of these countries, if there were no peacekeeping by the UN, somebody would have to do it. And it would probably be the United States or NATO, because we have the biggest forces. And that would be very costly and certainly domestically unpalatable, because we'd have people getting killed. Now, if the UN does it, they have 100,000 troops out there in 16 countries, and they are doing an excellent job in most of them. And I think it's a real bargain for the United States, because we pay 33% instead of 100%.
Meanwhile, UN officials, Ambassador, have complained that they won't be able to sustain peacekeeping operations if the United States drastically cuts its contributions. Is that realistic? I mean, if the United States pulls back on its support here, can't other countries step up? Or is there a real danger of damaging these operations?
Certainly other countries could step up. I'm thinking of some of the rich countries in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and that sort of thing. But without United States participation, most other countries would say, well, if the U.S. doesn't care, the U.S. is the most powerful, why should we care? You know, let these wars go on. It doesn't bother us.
Ambassador, beyond peacekeeping, we've been reporting on this show on refugee crisis all over the world this year. Places like the Mediterranean, the Horn of Africa, Myanmar now with the Rohingya there. How important has the UN refugee arm been in these crises, and how important is U.S. funding to those operations?
Well, the UN refugee operation under the UN High Commission for Refugees is absolutely vital, and we provide funding to the UNHCR, and they use that funding to help save people's lives. I don't see how we could save people without that organization.
So we've seen, Ambassador, a Trump administration budget proposing deep cuts to many of these programs, but we've also seen a Congress largely reluctant, in some cases refusing to implement these cuts. Is the rest of the world really worried that the United States is going to back far away from these responsibilities, or do they see this as sort of a domestic budget dispute that will shake out?
I think for the moment they see it as a domestic dispute, because certainly the administration is talking about deep cuts, but there's also debates going on in the Congress in the various committees, and they are totally opposed to these deep cuts. Sure, they want better organization. They want more efficiency. And I think the first State Department budget that has been passed by one of the committees does have cuts, but it's nowhere near the deep cuts that Secretary Tillerson has proposed.
Herman Hank Cohen, former ambassador to Senegal and Gambia under President Carter and former State Department Assistant Secretary of State under President George H.W. Bush. Ambassador, great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.